The Dakota Conference on the Northern Plains envisions the future of the region. We'll talk with Crystal Gonick about the stone soup metaphor of community abundance. You're listening to SDPB's In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Over the past year, visitors to the Center for Western Studies at Augustana University in Sioux Falls have been invited to respond to some provocative questions. What would you want to keep and what would you not repeat in America's next 250 years? The results are presented this week at the Dakota Conference of the Northern Plains. That conference is also a public affairs program featuring speakers and panel discussions. Crystal Gonick is on the Center for Western Studies National Advisory Council. She's leading a special 250th anniversary dialogue session. I talked with her via Zoom. And we start with those questions.
Honestly, I think one of the things that surprised us the most is that we had very even answers. In other words, the quantity of responses we got for the what do we not want to repeat, you know, and what do we want to keep, very, very similar. I think there's maybe one difference, you know, between the two columns. So that to me just said that people were being very thoughtful about what they put up on that banner. That's meaningful that we have people out there thinking critically and wanting to share something meaningful, I think, is a positive.
Tell us a little bit about Roots and Rounds and how this idea of community building and engagement is part of your life's work right now.
Yeah, thank you. Well, so my company is Juper Communications. It's just a small company that helps folks with their strategic planning and visioning and putting systems in place to really make, you know, improve quality performance. In addition to that, I have a nonprofit called Roots and Rounds, which is really all about building bridges and building wisdom across all generations. We have seven generations alive right now for the first time in human history because we're living longer for lots of reasons. And the world is changing at a faster pace. So researchers are starting to identify unique characteristics of groups of people born within a certain time frame on that overall time spectrum. And so that means we have six generations volunteering together and five of them working in our workplaces. So we've put together some programming that just helps build awareness, but going beyond just talking about it and really building some things that can help us increase respect for each other. We don't have to agree on everything, right? But we do need to. There's a certain level of just maturity and relationship that comes when we at least open our ears and eyes and respect each other. And in addition to that, some basic communication and leadership skills that frankly, I was blessed to be a part of different programs that I just, you know, learned a lot about leadership. And I think it was sort of osmosively. And my experience as a student on Augustana's campus more decades than I'm going to share right ago. It was a while back, but I think a lot of those things carry over into what makes the challenge that we have in front of us as a country today really relevant. So Roots and Rounds is just about bringing people together and helping them, you know, converse a little more openly and respectfully.
I want to talk a little bit about what the research shows about how to bring people together, especially in a rural environment, or how it might be different in a small city like Sioux Falls or Rapid or Aberdeen. What do we know are some tried and true ways to bring people and help them engage?
Yeah, well, definitely the research shows, and I'm also involved through my business, Juper Communications, with a national organization called Communities of Resilience and Excellence. And through that program, I'm part of a faculty team that does some deep dive into research, as you mentioned, but also really facilitates some learning opportunities with community leaders of all sizes, from San Diego to we've had some folks from Brookings, South Dakota involved over the years, and Northwestern Missouri and the East Coast, you know, lots of different sizes of communities. And one of the things that we know for sure is that a thriving community requires people with can-do attitudes. It's all about your mindset. Investing in yourself, and that can happen in a lot of different ways, whether through philanthropy or public investment, but lots of different ways we can invest in ourselves. Nobody's coming in to save our communities per se, right? We've got to do that work ourselves. And then the third is folks who really focus on this idea of intergenerational leadership and developing generational leaders so that when that time comes to pass the baton on this relay, race of life, that people are prepared and they're not just stuck saying, I don't really know how to do this. Or they kind of fall into that, well, it's always been done this way, so this is the way we're going to do it, whether it's really the right way to do it for that unique time in history or not. So those are three things. The other thing is that, I was just talking with a group of agribusiness folks on Saturday, and small farmers, and ag entrepreneurs, and I said, if we really want to excel in farming into the future and embrace all of the different changes that are happening around us, from a technology perspective, we as in an agricultural community also need to recognize that we need in our community a really strong healthcare sector, education sector, business sector, faith sector, natural environment, built environment. We also need to really foster strong social connections where people feel they belong and that they matter. Look at that bigger picture. That's what we can do, and that's what will help our communities thrive as we move forward. It takes bringing people together who don't normally talk to each other sometimes, unless we need them, at a moment's notice. But
You wrote a book, Reimagining Stone Soup, which is a folktale fable that's always been a favorite of mine. I'm guessing some people who are listening aren't familiar with it or have forgotten that they know this story. Tell us a little bit about the book Stone Soup, why this story has always resonated with you and with your work.
For those listening out there who don't know the centuries-old folktale, it's really about some soldiers come to town and everybody hides their food because it's a time of scarcity. I think we can all relate to times of scarcity where we're feeling that pressure right now. So they hide what they have because they don't want to share. These soldiers say, well, I can see everybody here is hungry too. Why don't we make stone soup? And they're like, what do you mean stone soup, right? But there's always plenty of stones around. So they boil a big pot of water in the middle of the village and they start talking about how wonderful stone soup has been in the past when they added some potatoes and they added some carrots. And pretty soon, people are curious enough. They're like, well, I might have an extra carrot or two or an extra potato or two or, an extra whatever it is. And eventually you've got this wonderful huge pot of soup that's big enough to fill the whole village, and everybody realizes that maybe they do have a little bit to share. Their mindset doesn't have to be in that place of scarcity. It can really be in a different mindset of abundance, when we work together on something that we share. It doesn't have to happen on every issue or topic, right? But on the things that matter to all of us. And I have just always loved that story. And so have used it in a couple of different leadership programs. And participants said, it'd be really fun if we could find a version of that story that applies to today, just in today's language and a setting that we can all relate to. So we said, well, why don't we give it a try? So we rewrote the story from our own unique perspective, and it's set in a recreation or camping area, and a storm comes through and the bridge is out. That's the big urgency, and so food trucks can't come in to deliver to the cafe that's in the restaurant that's in the recreation area. So two teenagers come up with a solution and everybody thinks they're kind of crazy, and pretty soon, the story unfolds and everybody starts sharing and they end up feeding the whole campground. So
Everybody eats,
everybody eats.
Are there obstacles to getting people around the table in conversation, in solutions mode? You mentioned the generations that are alive today, there's a lot of different viewpoints. That is diversity of age at work, which can be an opportunity, but can also be an obstacle. How do you help people walk through that and figure out how to meet each other where they're at?
Well, that's a great question. It's one I ponder with every day. How are we going to approach this unique group and their unique concerns? It just takes a lot of listening to each other. It's hard to get everybody to even show up, frankly. And so when I talk with groups about, are you making progress? Some of the communities that I coach across the country, they're like, well, I don't know. You know, we held this meeting and we had a bunch of people show up, but we didn't get anything decided. I'm like, oh, wait, hold on. You got a whole bunch of people to show up and you had a, you know, a civil conversation. That's a huge deal. So I think it's kind of recognizing those wins along the way. But at the end of the day, it's using words that matter and that resonate with people. You have to meet people where they are and start those conversations off with what makes you unique, what makes you strong, what makes your sector really important to this community. Let's talk about that and try to bring out as much of those assets and strengths and positives as possible, because that kind of sets the stage for everyone feeling good about being around this table. And then from there, we start just talking through what everyone cares about. You know, what are their dreams? What are their hopes? What are their aspirations and goals? And do it in such a way that it kind of helps everyone, while we're having that conversation, keep track of what everyone says. And usually what happens, I'm not going to say every time, Lori, but usually what happens is that, you know, one or two or maybe 10 things pop up in the conversation that everyone's, you can see them physically nodding their head around the table saying, huh, that's something I care about too. That's something we share. And I didn't think we shared that perspective. So it's focusing on what we share, not on everything that we don't, which does take a certain attitude. So it's kind of setting up that conversation environment for, I don't want to say neutrality, but definitely a little more positivity.
Are you optimistic about the resilience of communities?
I am so optimistic about it. You know, not every day is a great day, and I certainly go to bed frustrated some days, you know, but it's the little things along the way that you see. It's the conversations that happen between, maybe it's two lifelong enemy families in a community, right, that have been feuding for generations, and all of a sudden they're suggesting that they do something together. That's huge, right? Or organizations that kind of compete for funding. That happens a lot in communities, especially between nonprofit organizations and the faith community and the social service organizations, when it kind of comes out of, bubbles up in conversation that maybe we should work on this together and collaborate where it makes sense. Those are wins. Those are huge signs of hope to me. I feel like we all really care about a lot of the same things. We care about our family. We care about our friends. We care about the land that we live on, the place that we've chosen to call home. We care about, you know, the things that make us unique as humans. And it doesn't really matter how far technology takes us. Some of those things are core to being human. And when you start to see people tap into that, or at least recognize its importance, that gives me hope.
Crystal Galnick is on the Center for Western Studies National Advisory Council. She's founder and president of Juper Communications. The 58th Annual Dakota Conference on the Northern Plains is April 23rd and 24th at the Center for Western Studies. That's on the campus of Augustana University in Sioux Falls. The theme is The Future Northern Plains, Opportunities and Challenges. We've got a link up on our website to help you find more information about that conference. That's our conversation for today. I'm Lori Walsh from all of us here at SDPB. Find us online at sdpb.org/inthemoment. Email me at inthemoment@sdpb.org. and like and share the podcast with your family and friends. Thank you for listening.